Hey, everybody. This is Ian from Montreal, and you're listening to this episode of Ivy Envy Podcast, brought to you by awesome Patreon supporters just like me, even though my money's in Canadian. I don't know what that's good for. Go Cubs, go.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this, the 418th episode of the Ivy Envy Podcast. Well, it happened. On the last episode, we talked about the swirling rumors and the apparent inevitability of the Cubs trading for Aroldis Chapman. It happened. He is suited up in blue pinstripes as we speak. And we spent quite a bit of time on our feelings about this on the last episode, but we're going to talk about it a little bit more. We're going to do our best to talk about how Chapman impacts the bullpen, and we will look at some numbers to get a better idea of what he brings to this team on the field. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hello, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
So we are recording this during Wednesday night's game against the White Sox at Wrigley. The Cubs, of course, lost the first two games of this four-game set. And the first two games were played at the Cell. And I think we have plenty to talk about on this episode. So let's use that as an excuse to gloss over the first two games. do you guys have any thoughts on the first two games of this series? I mean, is it officially like a four-game series that's just split up half and half? Or is it two-game series? I don't even know. I'm calling it a four-game set. Let's call it that.
That sounds good to me.
I think that's fair.
Okay. So any thoughts that you guys have on the first two games?
Well, the first game was a little heartbreaking as it kind of seemed like the Cubs were going to win with Rizzo's big hit to tie it. That game had some frustrating moments. I mean, they had that Cabrera robbing Bryant's homer. And then, of course, I had the White Sox walk-off. So that was frustrating. And then I think that the next day's shutout loss was just a sandbag on top of that. So it all felt pretty heavy. I got actually pretty frustrated watching the second game, the futility of it. And tonight's not any better. So I don't know. It's this whole set, four-game set, has been a downer to me.
Yeah, and it mostly revolves around pitching, although you know, the Bryant Tootbland could have potentially won that game. Yeah, the offensive, I mean, other than the one good inning from Monday, offensively, it's just been more of the same when they've been bad. It's just like put something together, you know, and it's been frustrating to watch.
Yeah.
And I hope it isn't a sign of some of our earlier worries coming back to haunt us.
It just, yeah. I think some people are surely going to see it that way and completely forget that the Cubs won the first two series after the All-Star break. One thing, there's a couple things I want to talk about. Man, Montgomery just really does not seem to have his footing with the Cubs yet. I think he just needs that first strong outing. And obviously this is a small sample size, but with the Cubs, he's pitched 2/3 of an inning and he's given up 3 hits and 2 earned runs. So
not, I think his ERA is 27.
It's too much.
I love a two inning ERA.
I think Madden was trying to get him like a quick turnaround from that rough outing in the Brewers series. And yeah. I think Madden was like, all right, let's get him a good effective inning here in this Sox game, you know, in a high leverage situation. And it just backfired.
Yeah.
So I feel bad for him. I hope that he has a chance to get back out there soon. Maybe tonight, you know, who knows, but man, yeah, I just feel bad for him. And I'm sure it's pretty anomalous. Like, I don't think he's pitching like the pitcher that he really is.
Yeah.
But he hasn't, you know, hasn't had too much. We haven't seen too much of him either. So
right. And what we've seen has left a lot to be desired. I mean, results wise, you know, that's another thing is with a small sample and a pitcher, all you know, it's just results is all you have to judge them on, and not necessarily, you know, just remember that first home run that he gave up in Milwaukee was about the cheapest home run you'll see this year. So,
Factor to consider with him too is working with a new catcher that he's not used to.
Sure.
That maybe there's a little bit of trying to get on the same page that has to happen. That'll help him be more effective as well.
Right. Go ahead, Kurt, before I move on to something else.
No, go ahead. No, I'm done.
Well, I was going to say, I mentioned this. I think I talked about it on the podcast. I know I talked about it with people. I'm not sure if I talked about it with
you. You talk to people?
Sometimes. But after that 15-inning game in Cincinnati, I realized that I really don't like Matt Caesar as a defensive replacement in the outfield. And I didn't really like the idea of pinch running for Rizzo in the top of the ninth in Monday's game. And I think if there's a guy I really don't want to see pulled at any time, it's Anthony Rizzo. And I guess I kind of understand the reasoning. I'm not going to really second guess Joe Maddon because he knows far more than I do. But I'm just not a big fan of pulling Rizzo out of a lineup. I mean, Maddon kind of talked about the fact that the bullpen was stretched short and he didn't think that it was going to go very far, which doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't, it's not exuding a lot of confidence. But I just, back to Caesar as a defensive replacement, you would think with his speed that he would cover a lot of ground and that his defensive numbers would be decent, especially with them using as a defensive replacement. His defensive numbers really aren't that great. And at first I thought it was just his arm that's not very good. Although his arm numbers, that is I think it's, I don't know if it's FanGraphs or Baseball Reference. One of them has arm as a statistical category. It's FanGraphs. His arm numbers are better than his zone numbers. Which is kind of odd when you look at his speed and everything. But I have now seen two games in person that were lost in part by Caesar's fielding and his arm. In Cincinnati, Maddon sent Caesar to left field to replace Contreras, and the tying run scored on a sacrifice fly. His throw home was not good, and I really absolutely think Contreras could have made a better throw home. And then in Monday's game, the winning run is scored on a hit to center field that Caesar doesn't field cleanly. And I think if you have Hayward or Fowler in center field for that play, I think the Sox are less likely to send a runner home. And if they do, I think it's more likely that the runner is thrown out at home. So I just, I don't know. I like Caesar, and you guys have talked about, you know, in the last couple episodes about what he brings to this team off the bench as far as pinch hitting. But I'm not that sold on him as a defensive replacement.
Brain still processing. I don't disagree with you. I think partly that's changed because of the makeup of the outfield now. I mean, we started the season with Schwarber, Hayward, Fowler, potentially occasionally Soler outfield, and maybe he looked a little better as defensive replacement with that makeup. But now you throw Almora into the mix, even Contreras, right, whose arm is much, much better than what you just described. And I don't know, maybe that's part of it, but I tend to agree. I mean, he needs to be better defensively if he's going to stick in a spot like that, because a guy like that has to be good in more than one spot. You know, he can't just be a straight pinch hitter. Got to be able to play a little defense.
And he can play defense. And
you know, he's not going to keep up this level of pinch hitting prowess.
Right. And he can play defense.
If he doesn't, he needs to be good defensively.
Right. And he's not bad. It's just that, like, when the game is on the line, I don't want to sacrifice fly hit to Matt Caesar. I just don't think he can make a good throw, a strong throw, an accurate throw. Where, I mean, Contreras has a gun out there. If there's anybody I want in left field, I mean, he's not going to be able to cover as much ground, but man, he's going to be able to throw out anybody that tries, you know, that he would have any chance with, because he's got such a strong arm. But Andy, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, to your point about him replacing Rizzo on the bases, I mean, that seems like a no-brainer to put somebody in there that can run fast. We talked before about, at one time, Caesar was considered the fastest guy in the Cubs farm system, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you want that run to be able to score. It's not like Rizzo can't move, but Caesar definitely runs a lot faster than him.
Yeah, I think that's the case. If you have, let's say, Montero standing on second base, but I mean, yeah, Rizzo's not fast, but I don't want him pulled out of any game, just because
The Cubs have a huge lead or something like that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if something's heading into extra innings or whatever, I mean, I don't want to see him. I don't want to see Rizzo pulled out of a game when the game is not in hand. And
I can appreciate that point. Began. We've talked about how he's been the best player on the Cubs, hitting with runners in scoring position. And so you want him in the lineup still.
Yeah. One more thought on this. The first two games of the series. Can we take a second to talk about Javi just for a minute?
Just a second. Go ahead.
Since the All-Star break, he's hitting .387. That's Javier Baez right there. .387 since the All-Star break. Not a huge sample, but still, you know, it's notable. In Monday's game, he went 3-for-4 with a single, a double, and a home run. In the last 30 days, he's hitting .316, hitting .287 this season, and his strikeout rate is 23%. And those are numbers that I would have, I would have expected it taking a number of years for him to develop into that type of a hitter, to hit .287 and strike out 23% of the time when he was first called up. I mean, strikeouts were basically what kind of looked like we're going to keep him from becoming a major league baseball player, but I don't know. I know I talk about it all the time.
How many seconds is this, Kurt?
Several.
I know I talk about this all the time, but I mean, he's 23 years old, and this has happened so quickly. And I think it speaks a lot to his willingness to take coaching and to change his approach, because we saw him early in his professional career in the minors, and he wanted to put every pitch out of the ballpark. And he's really developed in a ton in a pretty short period of time, and I will continue to talk about him on every episode.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of falling in love with him too, because not only has he not tried to hit everything out of the ballpark, he's like done a 180 where he'll throw down a bunt for a hit. You know, he's doing all the right things. And what you don't talk about as much is defensively, the guy is incredible. A guy this good not playing every day at an infield position is kind of wild. The plays he makes and how good he is. So to have that option to play a lot of different positions is pretty incredible. So, you know, I'm with you on Baez. I think he's great, but let's remember this when he does and will struggle at some point. So let's remember the Baez love, because he's always going to be a good player, so let's not hate him.
Since he's been so hot too, I mean, how'd you like to be Madden coming up when Soler gets back, trying to decide? Okay, you're probably not gonna want to take Javi out of the lineup. So I mean, Contreras has been sitting a little bit more lately. He's gonna be sitting some guys that we wouldn't expect to be sitting. I think that Len brought up a good point on the broadcast, is that Hayward will probably start to get some nights off against lefties. So that's a guy that's probably going to be on the bench a little bit, as opposed to never. with the team getting healthy, it's going to be, you know, it's going to take a Joe Maddon to decide where to put the personnel on the field when, players like Javi, who are kind of expected to be role players, are like commanding to be in the lineup with their performance of late.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and I guess, you know, this is, we say it over and over again, good problem to have, where you could easily put Zobrist in the outfield and maybe Javi plays second, or you have so many options that it's great to have Madden, like you said, and B, it's great to have all these options because you can mix and match whatever works with the
focus on the matchup.
Well, and let's not forget La Stella, who in the last week he's hitting .538. In the last 15 games, he's hitting .324. So, I mean, man, it's just like you really do. It is really impressive that Madden is able to use all of these players and that they are able to maintain their production. It's really pretty amazing.
These numbers make it sound like they've been really good the past few
years. This is kind of like been the first month of the season. It sounds like we're talking about that, but no, not so much.
Well, but I think that's, you know, for any fans that are like, oh, they lost a game in,
Won the first, three series.
Right, yeah. So any fans are like, oh, they lost a game in Milwaukee, and they lost two to the White Sox. Oh, no, you know, this team is on the skids or whatever. I mean, like we said before, just look at the numbers and know that it has to all even out. I feel like we kind of covered a lot of our thoughts on the last episode, although this is one of those topics, I think, that no matter how much you talk about it, you never feel like you have covered it all, and you never feel like you've communicated yourself clearly. At least that's the way I feel. So I was thinking maybe it would help if the three of us just kind of shared our overall thoughts on Aroldis Chapman joining the Cubs. And what did you call him earlier, Kurt? Our soliloquies?
Yeah, our soliloquy. Is that the proper English lit term, Andy?
Well, technically it wouldn't be, because like if we were in a play, we were characters in a play, a soliloquy would mean we were alone on stage. No, it's
so if
not.
You guys could drop off while I do mine, that would help.
Yeah, so I...
Okay, but yeah.
It's a monologue, perhaps?
Yeah, that's probably more appropriate.
All right, so who wants to go first? In trying to summarize your feelings on this. Go for it, Kurt. Get it out of the way.
This is so, okay. This is so like junior high all over again. Who wants to go first in reading their paper? We've prepared statements, and so this isn't usually what we do, is reading off a page, but bear with us because this is, you know.
Don't say that we prepared statements, because if you say this is a prepared statement, I will never get a job with a PR firm, because this is about the worst prepared statement ever.
Okay. Well, for me, this is a prepared statement. I'm going to go all like ESPN on you. So I'm going to take a couple of deep breaths here.
Is that Skip Bayless over there? I can't see really well.
Stephen A. Smith coming to you. All right. So here we go. Pause. By most counts, maybe all accounts, Aroldis Chapman is not the finest example of a man. Domestic violence is a nuanced issue that has not directly affected my life, so it would be silly of me to try to analyze and offer a take on that side of the issue other than to state the obvious. At the same time, I'm not naive enough to think that you can magically separate the man from his actions. We don't watch games played by robots. If we did, 105-mile-an-hour fastballs would probably be a lot more common. As a baseball move, I like this deal. This was a show of strength, ensuring you won't face him in October pitching for the Nationals, but instead he'll be wearing the Cubs uniform, throwing 105-mile-an-hour fastballs past Bryce Harper. Did they overpay? Probably. But you'll always overpay when everyone knows you're rich. The best team in baseball just got better and improved one of the biggest weaknesses they had. The front office has sent a message we've all been waiting for. The rebuild is over. It's time to win now, not next year. But of course, the message didn't come in the package we expected. I'm not firmly planting my flag on either side here. How I feel doesn't need to be the way you feel, and vice versa. Like we said in the last podcast, whatever you're feeling, you're right. But as a baseball move, I'm willing to accept it in hopes that it improves the Cubs' chances of winning the World Series.
Man, that was organized.
There's my monologue. There's my prepared statement, PR firms.
I just basically started typing when I did my... I was like, I don't know where this is going. I guess we'll find out. Buckle up. All right, Andy, you want to share your thoughts?
Sure. I didn't want Chapman, but he's here. I felt like the Cubs could win without him, with Rondon as the closer, but Aroldis is here now. I don't want possible future success of this year's team tied to him, but I don't have any choice in the matter. He committed violent actions against his girlfriend. He was disciplined by the MLB. I feel doubtful that he's changed or learned his lesson, but I have no way of knowing that for sure. I like to pretend that all the players I root for are great guys, but I just don't know their hearts or their actions behind closed doors. There is strong evidence that many of the players for the 2016 Cubs are good human beings, but I'm sure some of them aren't. When it comes down to it, I'm a fan of the Cubs. I'm not a fan of Chapman's, but I have become a fan of many of the other 24. I want them to succeed, and I want the Cubs to win it all, but that doesn't mean I have to be a fan of certain aspects of it or even specific players. I hope that Chapman has changed, but if he hasn't and does anything akin to what he perpetrated before, I hope the front office will send him packing, even if it means eating money and taking a hit to the team's chances of going all the way.
Okay. Yeah, you guys are way more organized. I'm just going to ramble like usual.
It's okay.
I'm just rambling.
I think maybe the three of us will be a nice summation of a collection of thoughts.
Yeah. Well, I think that this is probably the most difficult topic that we've tried to discuss in our 8 seasons on the podcast. And I've felt it difficult to communicate my thoughts on Chapman, mainly because I'm having trouble organizing my thoughts. And on the last episode, I said that we don't know Chapman, and maybe he's changed, maybe he's not bad for the clubhouse. I was kind of talking about those types of things. And we, the three of us, and anyone listening to this, we probably don't know if he's changed. We probably don't know if he's bad for the clubhouse. I am less convinced that Chapman has changed. I think it's 99.9% likely that he's still a POS. And so how do you balance being a Cubs fan and realizing that the Cubs got the most dynamic and the most dominating closer with trying to be a decent human being and not wanting to cheer for a guy like Aroldis Chapman? And I honestly don't know, because in a way, that's what we're all trying to do. And I don't know if any of us have really figured it out. The events with the Chapman meeting with the media, that doesn't surprise me. And I think it shows that he's probably not changed, and he honestly probably has no real interest in changing. And he doesn't care if he signs with the Cubs at the end of the year. I think he's going to go to whichever team offers him the most money. And I don't think that the Cubs want him after this season. Early on, you know, part of the rumors was that the Cubs wanted an extension. And I think it's at first that made sense to me. And I think now, after kind of learning more, seeing more play out, I think that the Cubs have no interest in keeping him in the future. I think the front office saw a bullpen that they didn't believe they could win with. And I think that they knew he was their best short-term option. They tried to do their due diligence to let him know what was going to be expected of him. And I don't think that Chapman values that. It's a trade. He'll be gone soon. And I think, you know, this wasn't a gigantic contract that the Cubs were able to hold over his head. It's a trade, and he was going to get paid the same amount no matter where he pitched for the rest of the season. And I think the front office did their best to make this move palatable for fans and probably palatable for themselves. And so while I think I think we will be holding our noses with Chapman for the rest of the year. And I think that the front office will be doing the same thing. I think they'll be holding their noses. And it's really hard to cheer for a team and hold your nose at the same time. I don't know if you've tried this. And so I was thinking perhaps we could all show our displeasure by wearing like those like swimmer nose plugs or the face masks that doctors wear so that we can cheer the team and still hold our noses. I don't know. But I guess that's what we do. I have daughters. I have a wife. I have a mother. I have female family members. As a counselor, I've worked with females that have been victims of abuse, and I hate this move on their behalf. But I don't just hate it because I have people that I love that share the same gender. I also just hate it as a human being. And but he's on the Cubs, and that's not changing right now. And does this tarnish their season if they win it all and he plays a big role in that? I don't know. And right now, a part of me feels like it kind of does, and a part of me feels like it doesn't. And I don't know how we're going to feel in 2 or 3 months if we're so lucky that that all plays out, I guess. I think in a lot of ways, sports are an escape for us. And it's weird when our escape blends with some of the ugliest parts of humanity and forces us to spend days weighing all of this stuff in our own heads. When I just want to think about baseball. So I don't know. I don't feel like I've communicated clearly because I don't think I'll ever be able to wrap my head around this situation or how I feel about it. And I think that, most of you are all in the same position. So I think you'll understand. One of our listeners, Jeremiah in Dallas, he tweeted something last night. He said, if you're a Cubs fan and mad about Chapman, I suggest making donations to domestic abuse shelters. And he said, make a difference no matter how small. So this morning I called our local domestic abuse shelter here in Galesburg, and I told them that I'd like to set something up so listeners of our podcast could donate to them. They asked why we wanted to do that, and so I kind of explained this whole situation, and they were thrilled and really appreciative. So the director is going to call me tomorrow to figure out how, you know, all the details, and here in the next day or two I should have more information on that. But if you want to use this situation as an opportunity to support victims of domestic violence, then pay attention to our Facebook page and our Twitter account, ivmv.com/Facebook and at ivmv on Twitter, and I will share the details on our next episode. But I did not communicate myself clearly at all, because honestly, I have pretty much, I mean, don't you guys, like, can't you kind of understand almost every take on this situation? Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily agree with all of them, but I understand where everyone is coming from, and it's just a no-win. It's a no-win situation. I don't want to root for him, but man, if he's out there and he's pitching the ninth inning and he saves a game for the Cubs in a game that matters, am I going to sit in my seat and not cheer? No. It's just, it's, I hate it that we're put in this position.
Well, yeah, one last thing I wanted to say to respond to what you said was, the team is, they still built the team to make the playoffs for the foreseeable future. And we don't know what's going to happen this season. But like you said, they're set up for a lot of success in the future that would not have him involved in it, too. So,
right.
I one other thing that I kind of thought about including, but didn't, and I'll just sort of throw out there, but you know, I think Theo, Jed, the Ricketts understand what they just did. I don't think they made this decision blindly. They know that what happens in the next 3 months is going to affect how we, the fans, see them. And it's hard to use, you know, long-term words like legacy or whatever, but this affects how we look at them, and they know that, and they were willing to make this gamble. At least for now, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on that. But at the same time, I'm not going to, you know, cry for them. If this doesn't go well, it's on you. I guess it's kind of what I'm saying. Yeah. So I hope it works out for everyone. But they'll be judged accordingly.
Yeah.
And I don't think we need to carry that burden as fans.
I think you're right. Yeah. That's a perfect way to end it. I don't think we need to carry this burden because, yeah, we've said it all. And there's,
I want to say John in the chat just made a good point too, is that Chapman doesn't, he's not going to get any hits and score any runs. He's not going to get any at bats. So John says there will be others that will deserve praise if he saves a big game.
That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I just feel like, you know, I'm not going to, as I said, I understand where everybody's coming from. And I just kind of like put myself in the position of, if I was a female that experienced something like his girlfriend reportedly did, this would be a tough thing to stomach, to know that your favorite team chose someone like him. And I think that, on their behalf, like, this is just something that's so hard to, like, just wrap your head around. And I think it's just going to be one of those things where, we need baseball to distract us from it. Unfortunately, such a crummy thing to say, but like, I just don't, I know that there is no resolution here in my head. And so I want it to go away. So,
yeah,
that's all I have to say.
Well, unfortunately, it'll be here for the next few months. So,
right. Yeah.
Let's let it play out.
Yep. And so it's never going to feel right to put this issue behind us and to move on to baseball stuff. But I think that's what we need to do, because I think we could discuss this forever and probably not get anywhere with it. So let's attempt an awkward transition back into baseball. let's do a total reset now, because the transition isn't easy, but we have to do it. So, looking at everything that's happened with the Cubs in the last 2 to 3 weeks, I don't think nobody could have guessed all of these events. Winning the first number of series after the All-Star break, trading away prospects, getting real bullpen help. Nobody ever saw this coming, right, Kurt?
No, I don't think so. Not even your IVMV hosts. No, we did, actually.
We did see this coming.
If you go back to the Wilbur shielding his eyes episode, I think I texted you guys, like, this isn't any like Nostradamus stuff here, but at the very least we saw the what was coming, and that at one point Andy kind of talked about, you know, Dan Vogelbach's certainly not off the table, you know, shortly after Vogelbach's dealt for Montgomery, and then Corey says something like the scrap heap or the sort of makeshift bullpen is not going to cut it this year. And of course we see two bullpen moves shortly after that. And then I sort of capped that conversation off with something like, anything that makes this team better is going to hurt. So, there you go. There's your little IVMV ad, for predicting the future. Like I said, nothing too bold there, but you know, we all kind of saw this coming, and that, you know, you had to make this bullpen better, and that it's gonna hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
I just didn't expect the hurt to be in this manner.
Well, yeah, because I mean, we kind of talked about it hurting as in, like, we're going to, yeah, trade away prospects that we're, you know, kind of hopeful about. But that's what you have to do to get the talent that the Cubs were able to acquire. So, well, holding our noses firmly and talking about on the field stuff, Andy, how does Aroldis Chapman impact this bullpen?
Biggest impact is that Clayton Richard was DFA'd. So we're going to miss him quite a bit. No, in all seriousness, basically everyone else just gets shifted up an inning. I mean, Rondon is now a setup man. I would expect Strope to still see the eighth inning from time to time. But it just strengthens the bullpen. The leverage for everybody that they're used to facing is lessened a little bit. And so that can't help but have a positive effect on the bullpen. And this is, you know, a bullpen that has been kind of middle of the road and even below average in some categories in the National League. So, That's the main impact.
So that's how he impacts the bullpen. I took a look at some numbers today. We've been watching Chapman for years. We've seen him shut down Cubs batters late in games for several years now. So I looked at his numbers, and oh man, like, this is like scary stats of the week for a season here. So I'm just going to go through some of these. I'll tear through them, but they're quite impressive. Overall, in his career, opponents are hitting 157 off of him. OBP of 265, and they're slugging 232. In 1,382 plate appearances, he's given up 19 home runs. In his career, he struck out 42.4% of the batters that he's faced. According to Fangraphs, 27% is excellent. So he's, you know, about 15 percentage points higher than that. His career ERA is 2.16. His career FIP is under 2. It's 1.96. His average fastball is basically 100 miles per hour. He touched 105.1 this season. And if you want to look at his splits, lefties are hitting 123 off of him, righties 168. And since the Cubs acquired him for a potential playoff run, the race and playoffs, in September and October, opponents are hitting 129 off of him in those months. In his career, he's given up one home run in September and October. Cleanup batters, so your number four guy, you know, your big bats, they're hitting 106 off of him in his career. 106. When he has two strikes on batters, they're hitting .097. With runners in scoring position, batters are hitting 167. Of course, Andy, I think you mentioned that, or one of you guys mentioned that the Cubs benefit from this move by Chapman not going to someone else that they might have to face in the playoff race or in the playoffs. Cubs batters have a slash line of 178, 289, 233 off of him. And also, Andy, you mentioned on the last episode that the Cardinals have not scored on Chapman since 2011. In the last 4 years, Cardinals batters are hitting .074 off of Chapman. So there's a lot of
series. That's a division opponent.
Right. So they faced them a fair amount. So if you ignore who he is as a human, what a great addition to this team. And I think that's pretty much what we're forced to do. So I knew that his numbers had to be good. I didn't expect them to be that good. So,
yeah, I think you probably said this and I missed it, but like his strikeouts per nine is like he's averaged over his career in the 17s.
Right. So he struck out 42.4% of the batters he's faced.
But like, yeah, strikeouts per nine, I think it's over 17. So it's like, you look at the Kerry Wood 20 strikeout game, and of course he's a bullpen guy, but you know,
right,
per nine innings, he's striking out 7 average.
Yeah.
17, sorry.
Yeah.
17.
And a career FIP under 2.
Yeah.
It's just impressive.
I feel dirty.
I know. Right, I do too. I totally do.
I need to take a break and wash my hands.
Okay, well, let's move off this topic. You know, you can digest all those numbers and realize how really incredible they are. And just, that's, we'll leave it at that. We have a few listener questions that were sent in. We'll get to those here in a few minutes. John Baker Day is coming up this Friday. And if you ordered tickets and you got your shirt that sent to you, then you should have received it, or you should hear in the next day or so. If you do, take a picture, you know, if you have it on Friday, take a picture and put it out there on Twitter and Instagram. Use the hashtag John Baker Day. What, you think that's funny, Kurt or Andy?
And if you're not looking at the chat, you don't.
Not.
I mean, you're out of your element, Donnie. You're like a child that wanders in the middle of.
No, I'm not. Sorry. I if I look at the chat, I get too distracted. I thought you were making fun of the hashtag John Baker Day or something like that. So, all right, I'll let it pass. Use the hashtag John Baker Day on that day, but you know. It'd be kind of, I think John is really excited about this event. He's really kind of honored, and it means a lot to him. And so he will see your tweets, and I know that he would really appreciate it. He thinks all of this is a trip, so he would enjoy it. So if you have your shirt, go ahead and do it. And part of this event is a Q&A with John Baker, and Danny and I will be asking him a few questions. We have a few questions, ideas, but we wanted to open it up to you, the listeners. So if there's a question that you would want us to ask John Baker, then tweet them at me at IVMV or email me, Corey, Corey, at IVMV.com. I'm really looking forward to Friday. John has let us know that well, there's that there may be some current Cubs players there, and so when I heard that, I thought, well, how is that? Because the game's at 11, or you know, the game's at 1:20, and this is at, from 11 to 12. But it will most likely be, you know, if players do come, it will be guys that are not pitching that day, and so just think about what pitchers are not pitching that day and who you would most like to be in the same room with. And that person is rumored to maybe be coming. I don't know. You know how things go.
You know how rumors are, especially this time of year.
Right, right. So the shirts look awesome. Good job, Kurt. And I'm looking forward to it because the three of us are going to get to hang out again. And this is kind of rare. We get to hang out three times in 1 month, which maybe didn't even happen when we all lived in the same town.
Yeah, at least it not stuff this cool. Let's be honest about that. I mean, right. we weren't hanging out with former players, possibly current players, when we were kicking it around Moline.
Right, right, right. Also, speaking of John Baker Day, you can bid on the artwork of the five Cubs rookies. It's autographed by Bryant, Schwarber, Soler, Russell, and Baez. Go to ivmv.com and in the notes for this episode, there will be a link to that auction. The last I saw, the bidding was up to $1,000, but I'll be honest, this artwork is more valuable than that. Danny mentioned this on the Sun Ranto podcast, but imagine if this is the core of the group that wins the World Series. How much is that artwork going to be worth? And the fact that it's autographed by all five of the 2015 Cubs rookies is pretty amazing. And all of the proceeds for this and the entire John Baker Day event are going to Cubs charities. So I don't know about you, but I hate shaving. It is uncomfortable. I always get nicked up, and the razors cost way too much money. And then I discovered Harry's. So stop compromising your shave and get started with Harry's. For far too long, you've either paid too much for a comfortable shave or you settled for low-priced but low-quality razors. And Harry's offers something that you've never had before, a great shave at a fair price. Harry's makes its own high-quality razors. They cut out the middleman, and they ship them directly to you for half the price of the leading brand. So here's the story of how Harry's came about. One of their co-founders, Andy, he was traveling, and when he got to his destination, he realized that he forgot his fresh blades at home. So he had a razor, but he needed a blade. So he went to a drugstore. He had to wait 10 minutes for someone to unlock this special case, you know, where they act like they have precious diamonds locked up or something. So he needed some shaving cream and blades, and it ended up costing him $25. And the blades he got were, as you know from your own experience, average at best. He knew there had to be a better way, so he started Harry's. And I've used several brands of razors, even a direct competitor of Harry's, and I will say that Harry's razors and their blades are drastically better.
How do you get the best blades in your razor? You buy the factory that makes them. That factory's been making blades for almost a century, and Harry's makes just one razor that gives you all you need for a close, comfortable shave. It has five German-crafted blades, a flex hinge, and a lubricating strip. If you try them and you're not happy with the quality, Harry's will give you a full refund. It's a great razor. No good razor is any good without a great handle. They're simple and clean, have a great grip, a nice balanced weight to them. So I really like them, and I've been using them for quite a while.
Yeah, I've been a customer since 2013, and they've improved a lot since then. I mean, they didn't used to have such a good grip on the handles. They're always making things better. The packaging on the blades themselves has improved. And like Corey mentioned, they cut out the middleman, which results in factory direct prices. There's no upcharges, and these razors are half the price of the leading brand.
These razors are great for women, too. I ordered Tawny one so she could have her own. So why pay $30 for an 8-pack of razors when you could get them for half the price at Harrys.com? They have a starter set. It's called the Truman Set. And you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, and three of Harry's 5-blade German-engineered razors. And I'll say these blades do last far longer than any other blades that I've ever used. I think they're great. The three of us use Harry's, and it's seriously the best shave I've had. Andy and Kurt have been customers for quite a while, and I've been using them for a few months, and I see no reason to stop. Plus, there's a special offer for listeners of our podcast. Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with the promo code IVY, I-V-Y. Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman set. Choose the color handle that you want. That's H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. Enter the code IVY at checkout and you will get $5 off. Stop compromising and give Harry's a try today. Okay, so we have three listener questions. Let's get the Chapman out of the Chapman one out of the way here first. Nick in Wisconsin, he says, I know you guys will be discussing this trade ad nauseum, but I'm wondering how this really helps. You've already discussed the fact that Rondon has blown four saves, but what about blown leads by the bullpen? With Chapman, obviously the thinking is that this will allow Rondon and Strope to be used as the seventh and eighth setup, but have many late leads been lost in the latter innings? Does adding Chapman really help that much considering the cost? I'm not in love with any of the guys they traded. I just feel like they could have used some of these pieces to improve in other ways. Also, if they don't sign Chapman to an extension, that would seem like a really big hit if he were to go somewhere else. Would have felt better if this had been Andrew Miller coming over, because then there's an additional year of control. I understand if the Cubs weren't willing to trade Schwarber and then there was an additional cost, but this just seems extreme when you look at his anticipated impact and what it cost the team to bring him into the fold. Any thoughts on that, guys?
Well, first of all, the Cubs have had 29 save opportunities and they've blown 10 of those opportunities. So there's that.
Yeah. I'm not sure where to jump off here, but I've kind of, it's hard to evaluate relief pitchers in numerically, sabermetrically. There's kind of a flaw in the sabermetric system of how do you evaluate bullpen guys. And so I've kind of been trying to think about how you reshape this conversation of value for bullpen guys. And so I've come up with this scenario. And I'm just going to kind of float it out there. Let's just say it's late October. It's the ninth inning. Cubs are up by one. You're playing the, fill in the blank American League team. This game is for the World Series. And you assume this trade never happened. And here comes Hector Rondon. And I'm going to freeze time. And here comes Brian Cashman. And he says, if you can give me Gleyber Torres, Billy McKinney, Adam Warren, Rashard Crawford, I'll give you Chapman to pitch this inning instead of Rondon. And so what's your reaction to that? And like, what's your gut tell you on that situation? And you might say no, because maybe that feels a little too steep, but you definitely hesitate and you're like, oh, wait, I'd rather kind of have Chapman blow something by somebody here. And so even if you do say no, you can at least relate to what that kind of value means, what confidence in the ninth inning of a playoff game means. And I don't think there's metrics to measure that, but there's at least like the gut feeling of what that kind of, pitching performance can bring. And that's really valuable. So like I said before, I mean, from a purely baseball move, I'm down with it, but of course it's more complex than that.
Yeah, as far as the return, I think that you could pretty easily make the case that Torres was blocked with the Cubs. And sure, he's only in high A, but he's advanced. And I think he could move up through the system quickly. And the Cubs have Addison Russell at second base. And it looks more and more like Baez could become the second baseman of the future for the Cubs. I think the Cubs would probably like to sign Russell to an extension. And I think in some ways it would be a disservice to Torres to have him held in the minors by a set infield. And keep in mind that the Cubs did not have Addison Russell when they signed Torres. And so maybe Torres was supposed to be the shortstop in 2018, 2019, and kind of the shortstop of the future. And I think the Cubs have, when you have depth at a certain position in your minor league system, that's what you do with that depth, is you use it for areas where you have weaknesses. And so that, and based on the numbers that I shared with Chapman, yes, I think he makes this team better. And you're basically forcing teams to score all of their runs in 8 innings while the Cubs get 9. And in 31 games, he's worth 1.4 WAR this season, which is more than Rondon and Strope combined in less than half the innings. I know that's not exactly what you were asking, Nick, but I do think that you kind of, by bringing him into the closer position, and you kind of like push everyone back, I think it pushes quality pitching a little bit earlier into the game. And I really like the way that you framed it, Kurt. I think you answered it best.
Well, and the flip side is you will not face him in October.
Right.
You know, you aren't going to see him. I mean, because let's be honest, somebody else would have made this deal if the Cubs didn't. And, you know, it's like the Familia last year in the NLCS, when Familia came in, you're like, ah, geez, like this is done. That eliminated that whole inning. And now they've eliminated an inning from playoff games.
Yeah.
Potentially, you know, if you're ahead.
Yeah. Mike has a question here. He says, everyone talks about the disadvantage of the wild card teams being that they have to start their number one and therefore won't have them to start in the NLDS. Well, what about this? Another huge disadvantage in my mind is the mindset that a wild card team will take into the trading deadline. Are they likely to go for it by making a big splash at the trade deadline for the purposes of trying to make a one-game playoff, or will they back off a bit and therefore not improve their team that could potentially be playing in the NLDS or like the Cubs last season in the NLCS? I think it has a lot to do with the what moves the Cubs made or didn't make at the deadline last season. I'm not saying if the Cubs did make different moves, they would have beaten the Mets, by the way. Are the Mets going to make an Aroldis Chapman for their top prospect move this season to possibly increase their chances of having to win a one-game playoff against another team's ace, possibly Jose Fernandez or the Cardinals, Pirates, or Marlins? So I think that's a disadvantage all on its own. The uncertainty of the wild card round makes the two teams and all the ones fighting for those two spots less likely to improve their 2016 rosters. Therefore, the wild card team that advances is now in the same boat as everyone else remaining, minus the pitcher that started the wild card game, isn't as good as it would have potentially been when there were only 4 teams that made the playoffs.
And so I see that helping the Cubs this season, as I don't see them being a wild card team. So I see what he's saying. I mean, I think it's almost like he answers his own question. And I think it's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's certainly on a topic that I've heard brought up in the past week or so. I mean, I think effectively Wild talked about it on an episode, in the value of that other wild card position, and does it even count as a playoff position that you fight for? But I think the other point is that even though there are fewer buyers, but there are also then fewer sellers. And so even though a team may not push for that other wild card position, there are also fewer teams that are just going to unload. And maybe that ups the competition for the second half. So at least in baseball terms, there's more parity, and there's sort of less just unload because you're out of it. And I think that's what baseball is going for when they added that. But I think he's right on point with all of what he says, is that there's going to be a lot of teams just sort of waffling, make some small moves as opposed to going all in.
Yeah, and I really think that it has to do with where each team is. I think that last year the Cubs, around the trade deadline, it looked like they could potentially have a playoff spot, but it wasn't going to do any good. The Cubs were set up for years and years to come, and so it didn't really make a whole lot of sense, you know, to them at the time when there were other options. The you know, just scrap heap bullpen was basically the approach that they took, and it kind of made sense last year. And I think so. I definitely understand what Mike's saying, and I think I would tend to agree with him. I just think that every team is in a different position. And even when it comes down to like specific positions, you know, then it gets into control that you might have on a player. Maybe, yeah. So if you're the Mets, maybe you're not going to go after Chapman, but maybe you would go after Miller because you're going to get another year out of him. So I think that there's some of that too. And not every team, most teams don't have the riches in the system that the Cubs have to play with. You know, a playoff contender and riches in the minors. I mean, that's kind of the way that this thing was set up. And so, yeah, it's interesting to think about, but you're right. The Cubs will hopefully not be fighting for a wild card spot this year. And we're kind of hopefully beyond that. So, but yeah, interesting point. Chase here has a question. It says, imagine the three of you split two season tickets. Three people, two seats. For the regular season, it's easy. You each take two tickets to 27 games. How would you decide which two of you get the seats for a clinching game six of a World Series?
Okay, so I have to point out one immediate correction here is that it couldn't be game six at Wrigley. Because since the American League won the All-Star game, because, you know, it counts, it would go 2-3-2, so it'd be 2 AL and then 3 at Wrigley. So it'd be game 5. If they clinched at home, it'd be 5-4-5.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, now that I got that sort of awkward correction out of the way.
Well, I think if there were two tickets, it'd probably be me and Andy, because that just seems, I'm sure Kurt would have some work function or something planned that would keep him from being able to attend.
Don't get me started. You know, you guys, you know, you may be off for the summer, but you got to work in October.
Well,
you know, my actual thought is that we do some sort of draft. We just, because you got three games at Wrigley times two tickets, so there's six ticket opportunities.
Yeah.
And so we just draft two rounds.
And then... Yeah, so
go from there.
When faced with this question in the past, I don't really want to be at Wrigley for a World Series clinching game. I would rather celebrate with the friends and family that I've suffered with for so long. And I guess if all of my friends and family can get into the game, then sure, I would love to be there. But, you know, I also think I've watched so many more games on TV than I have at Wrigley. And when I think about watching the Cubs, I think of watching them on TV. I don't necessarily think about being in the ballpark. So if you guys wanted them, I would hand them over to you. But then I would be bummed because I wouldn't be able to celebrate with you guys no matter where we were. But I don't know. I want to be with my daughter, and I want to be, you know, with my mom and with you guys. And I don't think it would really happen at Wrigley. So I guess if I just think about where, you know, when that moment happens, where I would like to be, and it's more about the people I'm surrounded by than where I am.
That's a nice thought, Corey. So I'll take those tickets.
I was thinking maybe that's we
touching,
could,
Corey. And I'll be there. You know, I actually completely agree with what you're saying, and like I honestly, as happy as it sounds, I would really, if it comes to that, I'd like to be in the same vicinity with both of you. But if the opportunity came up that I could be in Wrigley Field, I it would be impossible to pass that up. So, yeah, I agree. But, you know, thanks for the tickets.
Well, chances are we're not faced with that decision. How about we sell them?
Well, yeah, I mean, or what if you like gave them to somebody who deserved it? you know, or not that we don't, but you know, you give them to some to deserve it, and then we take the cash and go do something crazy out at the lake and watch the game.
Yeah. Okay. So I changed my idea. I changed my my answer. Now it is that I would give them to two listeners. I would give the tickets to listeners. Oh.
Be careful. Be careful.
All right.
I'm still going. So Corey doesn't have them to give away.
I think we put like a WWE/F style ring, set it up in one of our backyards and just go to town like Battle Royale or whatever. What is SummerSlam? I don't know. What do you call that? One man enter. I mean, three men enter, one man leaves. I mean, so whoever's the first to be ejected from the ring doesn't get to go.
I don't think that's advantageous to the guy with a, you know, 33, 36 pants.
He's got, what,
so
yeah, it is. You know, you've got like an skinny insane guy
gets chucked out of the ring.
No, you got like some insane reach. You can just like reach over and smack us.
He's staying home.
What? Right. I could see you like palming my face and me swinging. I couldn't hit you.
Kurt's like 8 feet away and knocks us both out. He just punches in different directions.
I take all the tickets.
Yeah. Well, let's hope we're someday faced with that dilemma. So, Andy, do you have a Rube Waddell story for us this week?
Yeah. Imagine, if you will, it's the 4th of July, 1905. Rube Waddell's Philadelphia Athletics are facing Cy Young's Boston Americans, and there's a doubleheader that day. And in the second game of the doubleheader, the two famous pitchers get the start for their respective clubs. And in this game, the second game of this doubleheader, each pitcher went 20 innings. And Rube even got the last two outs of the first game in relief. So he went 22, he went 21 innings on this particular day. Now, that sounds crazy, you know, for two starters to go 20 innings, but according to PhiladelphiaAthletics.org, Waddell completed 87% of games he started, and Cy Young completed 96% of games he started. I forgot to put whether that was that particular year, just in general. But another note from that same site is from 1900 to 1909, Major League pitchers as a whole completed nearly 80% of their starts, including extra inning affairs. So for a starter to go the distance, it was not unusual at all. And for Waddell to complete 87% of games he started is only slightly above average, just a little above average. So anyway, Rube Waddell's Athletics ended up winning 4-2. Rube gave up two runs in the first, and then he went on to pitch 19 scoreless frames from there. He also drove in the winning run in the game. And the last two runs surrendered by the Americans, by Cy Young's Americans, were unearned. So out of all the amazing games that Cy Young pitched in, he would go on to call this game, a game in which he lost, the greatest game of ball he ever took part in. And it was a game where he faced off against our buddy Rube Waddell.
Wow. It's a lot of innings.
And then he punched a lion.
All right. So that does it for this episode. Don't forget, we have our weekend at the lake coming up here in, what, 2 weeks, I think? So come hang out with us. We're going to spend the weekend of August 12th here at my place outside Galesburg, Illinois. Camping, fishing, swimming, playing wiffle ball, drinking, going to the infamous Duffy's Tavern in Galesburg to watch the Cubs-Cardinals game. It's going to be a blast. Tons of people are coming. We'd love to hang out with you around a campfire. So visit ivmv.com/lake for more details. The Cubs wrap up this four-game set with the White Sox on Thursday, and then the Mariners come to town. We'll all three be up there on Friday for John Baker Day. We'll see a lot of you up there for that. It should be fun. So thank you for listening and downloading. We'll be back on Sunday with another episode. And until then, go Cubs.